Hello everybody, welcome to BitNote. We'll be talking about video games and video game music. Hope you enjoy! Well everybody, I think we'll start this off with a nice upbeat tune that I've always liked, and from a game that I've, well, I'll just play it and you can hear for yourself. So, that was the theme to Toxic Caves, composed by Howard Drossin for the video game Sonic Spinball, developed by Sega. Now, Sonic Spinball is actually a fun, as you might have guessed from the title, it was released in the early 90s, but yes, it stars Sonic the Hedgehog, Sega's eponymous mascot character, and in it, basically, there were just like all spin-offs, just taking something that was popular and giving a new flavor, but it was one of the few spin-offs that actually really took inspiration from what Sonic was about. The idea was that if you played Sonic the Hedgehog or Sonic the Hedgehog 2, you know, as in like the original game and its sequel, there were certain moments in it where Sonic would just basically hit off bouncers and then flip off flippers, like in a... So essentially it was like a pit act, the game would momentarily turn into a bit of a pinball game. So someone came up with the idea of, hey, you know, if some of the levels in Sonic games are a little like pinball machines, why don't we make an entire game completely based off of pinball? And that's pretty much where Sonic Spinball comes from. I mean, pretty much every level is a gigantic pinball machine. Now, you're actually able to control how Sonic moves through the air, and there are a couple of very small sections in the game where you can actually walk around. But for the most part, you're bouncing around, being flying off flippers, hitting one item or another. And the object of each level is to get a set of Chaos Emeralds that will open up the final boss, and you defeat the final boss by hitting him several times, and then you're on to the next level. I mean, it was fun because, I mean... as you heard, it had some good music, but it was fun because it made a variation of Sonic the Hedgehog formula, but not a huge amount. It still felt a bit like a Sonic game, and it was just fun to just bounce around. it obviously took a bit of control, and and like all pinball games, there's a you had to give up a bit of control, but because when the ball's bouncing around the place, it's hard to make sure that it won't end up directly going between the two flippers. But the levels were varied enough. Each level had its own theme, and there were a lot of crazy stuff you could do, and the emeralds were everywhere, and sometimes you'd be running on a mine cart. It was just a very fun game. It also So I think I'll move on to the next track now. This is from a pretty popular game, and I think the music from it is pretty damn good as well. Have a listen.
Thank you.
So, that was the theme for Sentinel Beach by Mutato Musica for Jack and Dexter by Naughty Dog, which was released back for the good old PlayStation 2. The music was actually composed by a company which makes actually plenty of soundtracks from TV, such as soundtracks for TV and movies. And yeah, it's as you can see, it's a beautiful track. And boy, this is Jack and Daxter. I honestly found the game so pretty inspirational, actually. I even created like a bit of a comic, kind of vaguely based on the idea of it. But the idea was essentially that you're this guy called Jax, and basically you've got this partner called Daxter who ends up being turned into a really small pet and is basically your wisecracking animal companion, while you yourself, Jack, completely don't say a word. And you basically go across this great big adventure across the side of this island that's littered with these great constructions and devices of a long-gone race called the Precursors. And that's kind of where the subtitle comes from, Jack and Daxter, the Precursors' Legacy. It was, in a lot of ways, I mean, when it was released to 3D platformers, yeah, they were around, but in a lot of ways, Jack and Daxter showed how you could just really refine it. I mean, they had double jumps, which is pretty cool. You know, the idea that when you can jump in midair. But overall, it just had this really, it all just came together so well. I mean, everything was beautiful. The atmosphere was great. It didn't have too much annoying, you know, side stuff you had to do, but there was a bit here and there that kept it interesting. It just, I mean, it said so much about how a 3D platform, but it was just great to make that journey. One of the great things about Jack and Daxter, and I think people should never underestimate how much this is important to a video game, was that everything was just one big, contiguous, flowing map. Now, if you don't play video games, what usually happens is you go to one area, and, you know, it's fine. Then you move on to the next area, screen pops up, loading, 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 you wait for it to finish loading, you go on to the next one. Then you go on to the next one, loading, loading, you know, it's fine. Now, your gamers are used to that. What Jack and Daxter did was ensure that there were literally no loading areas in the screen, and there weren't really any areas that, there was actually a bit of a teleporter that would get you around, but essentially, what this meant was that every area in the entire game flowed into the next area. You could basically make a single walk from one side of the island through all the levels. You know, that's another thing. There weren't like levels. Everything was just blended calmly together. And it's just because there weren't any loading screens, your mind never really grasped the idea that there were separate levels that were just joined to each other. You just go from one environment to the next to the next. It made it feel like such a great big flowing world. And it's just because the fact is you can walk from one end of the island all the way through the entire game, all the way to the other, just in just one great big walk, and no pauses or anything. And it was pretty amazing. I mean, there was great gameplay too, great environments, great sense of atmosphere. And some of the dialogue was actually pretty decent too. You had your companion and he'd make all the, you know, side remarks. And, you know, it wasn't exactly a hugely new idea, but, you know, it was just, it had a lot of fun and a lot of atmosphere to the game. And that's kind of what matters. It was also, there was also some good characters. The plot was decent. And like I said, it really made you feel like it was another world. It was, the whole thing was like set on the coast of Ireland, and you made your way through so many different environments, and definitely a great game. Highly recommend it. I love it a lot. All right. Now, sometimes in this show, I don't just try to play music regularly just straight out from video games. I also try to play music that has actually been put into video games in an interesting way, and because video games are so interactive, there's a lot of ways you can do that. This next song, in a way, actually allows you to choose what the next stanza of the song is going to be while the actual song is playing, and it's a lot of funny thing. It's a pretty funny method, and here's just a compiled version of someone's decision choice through the entire song. So have a listen, and I think it's a great song in any event.
We're a band of vicious pirates,
a sailing out to sea.
When you hear a gentle singing,
you'll be sure to turn and flee.
Oh, this is just ridiculous.
Come on, men.
We've got to recover that map.
That pirate will be done for when he falls into our trap. We're a club attuned for rovers.
We can sing in every clef.
We can even hit the high notes.
It's just too bad we're tuned deaf.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
Let's go defeat that evil pirate.
We know he's sure to lose, cause we know just where to fire it.
We're thieving balladeers.
A gang of cutthroat mugs.
To fight us off, you won't need guns.
Just jolly good earplugs.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
Crew, let's get to work.
Our vocation's a thing we love, a thing we'd never shirk. We'll fight you in the harbor.
We'll battle you on land.
But when you meet singing pirates,
there'll be more than you can stand.
Oh, that was a good one.
No, it wasn't. Song, we got to move.
The battle will be long, but our courage we will prove. We're a pack of scurvy sea dogs.
Have we pity, not a dram?
We all eat roasted garlic.
Then sing from the diaphragm.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
Singing, more sailing.
When we defeat our wicked foe, his ship he will be bailing.
If he try to fight us,
you will get the nasty whacking.
If you disrespect our singing,
we will feed you to a kraken.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
Getting so sick of you guys and your rhyming.
We're ready to set sail, though the cannons need a priming.
We're troublesome corsairs,
and we've come to steal your treasures.
We would shoot you on the downbeat,
but we gotta rest by measures.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
And the deck is what we'll mop.
You say you're nasty pirates, steaming, thieving, babush whackers. From what I've seen, I tell you, you're not pirates, you're just slackers.
A pirate I was meant to be. Trim the sails and roam the sea.
We'll surely avoid scurvy if we all eat an orange.
And,
Well, door hinge?
No.
Guess the song's over then.
Guess so.
Okay, back to work.
Well, gee, I feel a little guilty now.
And there we have the ship song from, The Curse of Monkey Island, composed by, Michael Land, who was the same guy who composed the original Monkey Island theme, which I played in a very early show, I think the first show, in fact, and of course it was developed by LucasArts. Now, oh boy, you can say so much about Monkey Island, but what happened with Monkey Island was that there were two games and they were great and pixelized, you know, well, they were pixelated and everything, the classic retro stuff, and there were great adventures, and then was Curse of Monkey Island. Now, this is when it's This was a few years after the second Monkey Island game. Things had become beefier, and so they were going to create another big addition to the franchise. And boy, I mean, you know, when you're rebooting something, when you're returning something after a bit of time has passed and trying to introduce a lot of new elements, there's a lot of risk about whether it'll be pulled off or not. But in my opinion, although for some reason not other people's, but in my opinion, Curse of Monkey Island really hit the note. There was good quality. There was basically hand-drawn characters, a couple of animated cutscenes that you'd expect to see in a feature animated film. Great voice acting. We finally heard what Guybrush Threep would actually sound like. And just everything was made just to give it the great, wacky, crazy sense of humour. Great storyline. And it was a really, really fun game. The sequence you just heard was basically when you're with a bunch of pirates, you know, you've getting a crew together and going on a ship is kind of a theme that certainly pops up more than once in the series. And essentially, they're all more concerned with actually singing than actually sailing the ship to the next given destination. Obviously, as you can see in the song, that's... So each time they're singing, you try to stop them by selecting one of the phrases that just pops up to say, you know, stop singing. And of course, they just integrate in the song. And you saw how it happens in the end. And I don't know, it's just a really fun song and a great way of integrating it into a video game as well. Curse of Monkey Island, obviously I highly recommend it, obviously after the we've played the first two LucasArts games. But like all games, there was a lot of really tricky puzzle solving. But it was actually interesting. The game actually had more than one mode. You could like have you could actually have two modes, like a normal mode and extra hard mode that would have a lot more puzzles. Of course, I went for the extra hard mode because I liked the challenge. I loved the idea of just solving the puzzles and figuring things out. And generally, the puzzles in this game were pretty okay, although, as in every adventure game, sometimes a puzzle seems a little bit obtuse, but ah well. So, on to our last game, actually, and I've got something slightly different. Now, some of the music from this game is a little short, so I'm going to put two tracks back-to-back and finish up with a nice one. But I think that this is basically from the game Phoenix Wright for the DS. Now, Phoenix Wright is basically... it's a fun game, all right. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but it's kind of actually rather compelling. You basically are this trainee lawyer who just qualifies pretty much by the end of at the very beginning, who called Phoenix Wright, who basically is a defense attorney. So, pretty much, each game is pretty much divided up into several different episodes, most of them are usually called turnabouts, so there's like five of them per game. And in each one, essentially, you have someone has been accused of murder. Shocking. And what's more, you as a defense attorney have to prove their innocence. Hurrah. But of course, there's a slight problem. Well, the slight problem is practically every single piece of evidence points to them actually having committed the crime. And very, very often, your own client will clearly refuse to tell you vital information about the case that you're pursuing. So essentially, you go into pretty much every single case knowing absolutely nothing about what's going on and trying to damn well figure it out and hope that you can get your client's conviction for guilty overturned. All of this is set against the backdrop of the fact that the game was originally set in Japan, where they really only have court cases if they're absolutely damn well sure that the person's actually guilty. And so, therefore, the defense attorney is seen by pretty much everyone, from the prosecutor to the judge, as just a mere formality, and you basically have to try extra hard to have a single one of your points to be actually proved and taken for granted, rather than just dust it off. I actually find this game kind of humorous for how unrealistic it is, because, I mean, in real life, if you've got a client, you have to... If you're a lawyer, you have to damn well know if your client is innocent or guilty. And... along with several other things, but of course this is all about escapism, and you basically have to desperately, over the course of the thing, poke evidence. Every time something is accused against your client, you have to find evidence, use evidence against the client, try to find gaps or holes in the testimony and press them for it. And that's actually really, really fun, because it's making me use your brains. You have to find out all the anomalies and tricky things. And every time you find a hole in the prosecutor's accusation, it gives you another clue. And you essentially, each trial has to take place over 3 days. You do have some ability to investigate crime scenes, because apparently in this game, lawyers can do criminal investigations on their own. But ultimately, all the... the fact that so much is against you is one of the real appeals of the game. Because, I mean, at the beginning it seems hopeless. At the beginning you're even wondering why bother defending the client. But as you keep going forward, I mean, the evidence against your client almost seems compulsive. But almost seems, you know, completely definite. But as you keep going and you uncover piece after piece, it all suddenly starts to come together. And I mean, that's really one of the great things about the game. The writing is excellent. I mean, in the first game, some of the twists, some of the episodes, they could easily far outdo some of the, you know, American crime dramas and stuff that you see every day. I mean, some of the twists, they're just, or some of the ways that it seems extremely obvious that a crime happened one way, but it actually happened a completely different way. It just seems to be so awesome. I actually was kind of curious about this, about, you know, some of the inspirations. Obviously, courtroom dramas have a bit as well. But then actually, my parents were getting some Perry Mason DVDs, and I sat down to watch a few. And let me just say, I mean, I think I see maybe a little bit of Perry Mason inspiration behind it. I mean, the idea of a lawyer basically doing criminal investigations and ultimately having to prove their client's innocence, I mean, well, just there might be a bit there in that. Of course, I think the real appeal with Phoenix Wright is a whole combination of things. It's just, like I said, it's got a sense of humor. The stories are very interesting. The reversals are very well done. Great. And it's just, overall, I think it's just a great ride. And the fact you have to use your brains at points, and like, you can't just let the guy figure out the mystery for yourself. You have to make your own leaps of logic and help him win his case and prove the innocence of his client, who nearly always seems to be innocent for whatever reason. What you are about to hear is Cornered and Won the Lawsuit, the First Success, by Sugimiro Masuka from Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney, developed by Capcom. This has been BitNote with David Collins. Hope you enjoyed it.